Hi, you're listening to the Best Bits of Breakfasters with Mon, Bron and Daniel for the week ending Friday, the 10th of April, 2026. We broadcast live every weekday morning on Triple R from Melbourne, Wurundjeri Country, Australia. Coming up on the pod this week, my first week back, Bron has a run-in with a man in a chair. She can tell you more about that.
We have Phil Wang was in town for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Uh-oh is the name of his show, not how we feel about him being in the studio. And Dr. Jen dropped in to talk the weirdest of sciences, the biology of tickling.
Bron slips through a comedy fan's facial recognition, and Friday funny bugger Geraldine Hickey is back on Breakfasters with a weight off her chest.
Triple R.
Liz, my partner, yesterday, she had a bit of fire warden duties at the office. I know, she got yelled at.
She got yelled at,
because it was raining. So they did there was a big drill.
They said, there's never a fire when it rains.
There's never. Come on, guys. Obviously the rain would put the fire out. But, yeah, so she had to stand outside and direct people where to go. And this guy came up and yelled at her and said, this should have been called off in the rain.
Oh.
Because, exactly, no emergency would ever happen in the rain. And he's like, I want your full name. I'm going to make a complaint about you. She's like, I don't organize it. I only just found out as well. I'm just wearing the hat. So she's quit now. She's quit as a fire warden. So she has a job. Just the fire warden bit.
Yeah, the pressure.
With the pressure of a fire warden.
Do you get anything for being a fire warden? Just the pride. It's like being an
exo. She's just, well, I mean, I wouldn't have been doing it in the first place. She volunteered, which I think is, she's a better woman than I am. I have been a fire warden in an office before, but that's because I was the lowest paid person in there. So I was the shit kicker and my boss was like, you have to be the fire warden and the first aid officer. And I was like, you should get someone with a bit more skin in the game because I do not care if this place burns down. I was a very bad fire warden.
I'm getting that impression.
Yeah. But the one time, she was all by it. Like, she was on her own and he came up and picked on her and she was like, if you want to escalate your complaint, you can go to that much bigger security officer over there. And he went, no, I'm fine, and then walked off.
No, so, I've chosen you for a reason that I won't disclose.
But I was a first aid officer and I'm so glad I'm not in an office anymore. There was a guy who used to fall off his chair almost annually. So he'd fall off his chair, he'd get a bit of workers' comp, he'd come back, he'd fall off another chair.
Would you, as in you saw him fall? Did you see
him? I didn't see him fall. But it was just, well, the last time when I was the first aid officer and he did it, there was a big thump and everyone knew what it was. So no one moved.
Oh.
No one wanted to be responsible. And he laid on the ground for a bit. Like people who were sitting beside him in an open plan office didn't spin their chairs around. And he's lying on the floor and he goes, oh no, it's happened again. And we had to be like, oh no, are you okay? And I had to call an ambulance.
What?
Which was, it was mortifying. I had to go call the ambulance and they go, okay, what's your emergency? And I was like, oh, Rob's fallen off a chair. And they were like, oh, is he hurt? And I was like, I was like, honestly, no, I don't think so. But
how many times have you done this before?
I think this was the third time. God. But it felt
so
like a lot.
Like boy who cried, well, swivel chair or whatever.
They bought him a special chair. He had a special reinforced chair.
And he still fell
off. He still got it. Yeah. Well, what happened was everyone was so confused how he broke the chair because the chair was broken. And they're like, we paid so much money for this chair. It's not supposed to break. I was responsible for the chair. I had to lock it in an empty office for the workers' comp investigation.
Oh.
And I was responsible for the people were coming up, different departments. They're coming in. They're going, we heard about the chair. Can we have a look?
Mm.
Everyone's going in. They're having a look, trying to figure it out. No one can work it out. Everyone's theory, everyone thinks he hooked the arms under the desk and then just laid... Put all his pressure back for 12 months until it snapped. Just like a prisoner of war digging a tunnel with a teaspoon. He was just like, I'm getting out.
And that was the intention. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think so. Because the other thing that happened was the ambulance came and he got the green whistle, which I thought, was a bit extreme.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So now he's high.
Now he's high at work. Yeah.
And
he's
soon to be rich.
Yeah. I've never been more jealous in my life. I'm going to throw myself on the ground. But no one went with him. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So it's just they wheeled him out. And then I remember kind of walking them to the lift. And they got in the lift. And there was a moment where I'm like, am I supposed to go down with him? And I was like, I guess not. And then the lift doors just shut, and that's the last time I ever saw him.
Oh, then he didn't.
I left, but he might be back there now.
So it sounds like it could have been a serious injury in that sense then, if you never saw him.
Did you know that he, were you there long enough to see him allegedly fake it previously, or was that gossip?
I hadn't seen him fake it previously. I knew that he, when he came back on the return to work, and I knew about the special checks I had to order it and organize it. And then there was another guy in the office who then would do impressions of all of his different falls. Because one fall, he went forward and he got trapped under the desk. So that was a very fun one. So he would do that, act out. And then sometimes he'd get someone else to push him around the office in a in one of the chairs while he sucked on a green highlighter. And that was the other impression.
He's done you a favour, this guy.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Good,
really awesome. United everyone. Yeah. Everyone got into the chair. Everyone's trying to figure out how the chair happened.
And would he come back to work after other falls with like a sling or, you know, some kind of cast?
It would be a very much a slow return to work. So a couple of days, light duties. I mean, we're already in an office.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Let's bring shame back.
Oh, please.
Yeah, that's a big way. A bit more shame. Should have gone to Catholic school.
Shaming and guilt. It needs, it's maybe it's gone away just a bit too far and bring back it just a tiny bit. Do you think
you think TED Talks ruined the world?
do you suspect or was the gossip that this one worked?
As in
this last green,
like he really
whistle.
Hurt himself, or he really
that he would get additional compo or whatever.
I think so because he had the special chair, so there's like a good. He's got a good case.
Yeah,
you know, he's got a good case.
It's like I couldn't like I, it's like I couldn't have fallen if I wanted to.
Yeah,
it's just a bad chair. It's not me.
Yeah.
I thought the chair was to prevent him from falling.
It was.
So wouldn't the chair kind of insure against him?
I think
like,
it was
supposed really,
to.
Really, in a buy that you like poleaxed yourself on like the world's safest chair? Like, you sure you haven't bitten off more than you can chew, compo wise, mate?
Well, I haven't heard, but I think, well, then he'd be like, everything, you know, you go anywhere, you buy this special chair and it still breaks. What's a man to do? He wasn't even that big, he was just a normal sized guy.
Yeah.
There and was no other like mobility issues.
Nope.
Yeah, okay.
No.
Well, I know how he goes.
I mean, an absolute punish.
Yeah.
So.
How would he go at restaurants, this guy? Like, you'd never want to go out to dinner with him. Because he would fall off, if he was just falling off all kinds of chairs.
Do you think maybe he'd throw himself down the stairs and stuff as well?
Imagine, like, do you want to go out for dinner with Bill? Absolutely not.
No.
We are getting a coffee and we're walking.
I don't want not after what happened last time.
I've seen what happens to that man when he sits.
The only table that needs a fire warden as well.
Yeah.
No, that is the worst job, fire warden. Well, you go around the office and you go, we've got to go. They go, I don't feel like it. So, all right, well, burn. I don't care.
You do have to put your hand up for it.
Normally.
Do we have a fire warden at Triple R? Most likely not.
Well, it's just us, Daniel. Yeah,
pretty much, we don't have one. We should elect one now. I don't know. I nominate Mon.
Yeah, you seem responsible.
Just because I press the buttons. I could press the button. I could put out a fire.
Yeah.
But I'm not putting out the fire.
You're just leading us to the...
I'm close to the door, so I guess I should do something.
Yeah, that's true.
Closing the door with us in it.
Yeah,
I think exactly. Daniel would be able to look the best in a hard hat.
Yeah. All right. So when there's a fire, what's going to happen is I'm going to leave the door open, but I am going to piece it out.
But that's so I can leave first. I think that's fine.
Well, Godspeed.
Yeah, if you can keep up. Yeah. Good luck.
As long as it's raining outside,
yeah, exactly.
We'll all be fine.
Then it'll be fine.
It's logic.
Triple R.
Phil Wang is a stand-up comedian who has starred in two Netflix specials, Wang In There Baby and Philly Philly Wang Wang, as well as appearances on Taskmaster UK, 8 out of 10, Cats Does Countdown, Nevermind the Buzzcocks, as well as being guest host on Have I Got News For You, and appearing on That's My Time with David Letterman. Phil is back in town with his comedy festival show, Uh-Oh, and to tell us about it, the recently moustachioed Luxor enthusiast joins us now. Phil, welcome to Breakfasters.
That's my favourite intro ever. That's great. It's so good to be here. Thanks, guys.
Have you landed on Luxor that you like here?
I haven't had a Luxor yet. I've been having Koi Tiao at Kakilang in the CBD, and Lulu's. I love Lulu's, which used to be called Lulu's Cha Koi Tiao, and is now the more generically named Lulu's Malaysian hawker. Yeah, man, Melbourne food is just the best, and there's even more Asian restaurants than before. Somehow they found this 3 millimeters between the to Asian restaurants to add another Asian restaurant.
That's right. Maybe since you were here, we got a Koreatown.
Did you?
Yes.
Where is that?
It's towards Spencer Street, I think. It's towards the back of it. Look, it's not. Okay, I'm not saying it's wildly popular, but it's
happening. Okay. It's starting.
Yeah. What's been happening in your life? Can you check us in? How are you feeling? And
Gosh, man, that's a big question.
I know it is. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm at the sort of start of the journey with this show, a new show, and my first new show since 2024, which is when I did the last special. And I've sort of not really been focusing on. I haven't had a big proper, project to work on until now. Between then and now, so it's been really nice to do the same, to do the show every day and work on it. And especially in Melbourne, which is such a nice audience.
What about writing? When you correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure. Did you get some gags up with Amy Schumer?
Oh, that was it. Yeah, that was a while back. That was at the last. Not the last, it was at the Oscars where the slap happened.
Right.
Yeah. I wrote some jokes to Amy Schumer, she used one of them.
Yeah.
Before the slap happened. Mm. And it was about Will Smith.
Amazing.
Thank God you didn't get Amy Schumer slap.
Yeah, totally. do you push the envelope more if you're writing for someone else, or do you know where your line is compared to...
Well, I push the envelope quite far when there's a script check. Anyway,
yeah.
I think comedians, when I've presented an awards, some of the jokes I've written before the first meeting are just appalling. but you're trying to shift the Overton window on what the producers will accept. So you go something, you go really, really hard, and then you go, okay, fine, I won't do that, but I guess I'll get to do my...
So you just go super racist. Yeah, that's right. All
right. Yeah, that's right. You get it, you're a comic. Yeah. But yeah, that's wild right now. I mean, recently, the growing the moustache has taken a lot of effort and energy and protein.
And this is a loved one's recommendation.
Sorry?
This is a loved one's recommendation to grow the moustache.
It was sort of my last relationship. She's like, she gave me a conference, like, you should try, you should go for it. And I was like, I don't know, it's never worked out. But what I've realized was actually what's as bad as the rest. So all the hairs that grow in my chin are horrific. And so as a whole, the package was disgusting. But I realized that actually the moustache on its own grows okay. So I just have to keep shaving everything else.
So are we saying patchy or...?
Oh, it's like... Genuinely a 13-year-old boy's chin. Like, dot, you can count the hairs. It's not good. I kill for so patches. It's literally individual hairs.
You said last relationship.
Yeah.
Incorrect. So the moustache stayed, but...
Yeah, is this a relationship body?
Ended.
Yeah, I got the moustache in the settlement. Yeah. She has visiting rights. Every weekend she'll come and spend time with the moustache. Yeah. It's the one thing that kind of stayed. Well, what it is now is that I have 5 minutes of stand up on the moustache. So until I come up with a better 5 minutes, I have to keep the moustache. You should never do that as a comic. You should never write material about something that could be transient. But, but I've done that. I also it took so long, so much effort and time that I'm pot committed now, as a poker player might say. Yeah, I know how hard it is to get back here, so I'm quite hesitant to get rid of it.
Do you do the poker? Do you play poker?
Yes. In London, there's a bunch of us comics, and once a year around Christmas, we We have a big poker game.
Lovely.
Yeah, but it's something that I don't play very much. Honestly, every year on the way to the poker game, I Google poker beginner tips.
Yeah.
I'm shocking at poker because I get like a pair of nines and I'm like, I reckon I can do it.
Oh, I think that's actually better than me. I'm too much the other way. I'm too scared. I'll have like a pair of kings and I'll go, someone has a pair of aces. And I'll give up. I just assume like little old me wouldn't win a hand.
No, I'm like all in. I'll win. And then I'm out immediately.
I'm gobsmacked that televised poker allows sunglasses. I thought the whole idea was maybe to be able to read people or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it? Like, people can wear sunglasses, they can put headphones on, baseball caps. Yeah. I feel like there has to be uniform.
I agree.
We start a new competition. Mm. Everyone's naked.
Yeah. Well, you guys from home, for goodness sakes.
Oh, he's excited about his hands. Yeah. Interesting.
Got him, yeah.
What about Sartori Lee? I remember I saw you on stage once and you looked, this sounds like a backhanded compliment, but you look comfortable in a tracksuit.
Who is it?
When was I wearing a tracksuit on stage?
Yeah, well, was it Max Watts or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I was probably trying to be cool. You know what, though? I think I dress better now than I used to, but I've realised that I can't dress too nice on stage. I can't dress too cool. I cannot look like I'm trying to look cool on stage. It is like kryptonite.
Oh, really?
I think it goes against my onstage character.
Yeah.
And also it's kind of distracting.
Because you look so good, people can't hear what you're saying. Because they're just ogling.
No, I think they're kind of like, who does he think he is? Wearing his old tracksuit and a chain. You know, like, what's happened to him? He used to be sort of the kind of nerdy guy that I could sort of, you know, laugh at a bit. So I find what a comedian wears on stage is very important, right? So I kind of wear like... I'm wearing something a little weirder this year. I'm wearing like a weird little gilet because I think I look kind of goofy.
People want their Phil Wang daggy.
What's that?
Daggy is an Australian term. That
I don't know daggy.
No,
you say daggy. It just means kind of like uncool. I guess what is that the best
definition? Oh yeah, right. It means uncool. A bit square.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a bit drab.
It's hard to provide a synonym for, which makes it, I suppose, a uniquely Australian term.
Yeah, right.
But it's something that...
The Australian genocide.
That's right, daggy,
but kind of lovable.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
That's what you're going for.
That's what I have to go for. That's what my fans expect of me.
Yeah. I heard you speaking recently about music videos. You're on a show about...
Sally AB's music video podcast. Yeah, it's quite a nice idea. You have to sort of talk about the music video that you find the sexiest, that you first saw, like the best ever.
Yeah. And I was.
It's quite nostalgic because it used to be such a thing.
Such a big thing.
In
Malaysia,
we had MTV and Channel V. Did you get Channel V?
We had Channel V.
Did you? Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so we'd flip between MTV and Channel V watching music videos, and there was such a thing, and now. Like, no one cares. Yeah.
That was the whole Saturday morning, right? It's just...
Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. MTV's officially gone. Like, yeah, they don't play music videos at all. We have Rage.
You know the last song they played?
What? Oh, Video Kill the Rays.
Video Kill the Rays.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And you mentioned a Michael Jackson music video. I'm like, they went like... Because I was getting into it at the same time.
On the phone till 3. Yeah.
And they're like short films before the music starts.
They really were.
Oh, like Thriller. Who directed Thriller?
I'm not sure.
Oh, someone's going to hate this. A big director directed the Thriller film clip. Yeah. And Michelle Gondry has directed...
There's a way we could find out.
Yeah, no. There's no internet here at Triple R. Actually, please subscribe.
But yeah, it's because you also mentioned that you don't look back. You're like a shark.
Yeah, I'm not a very nostalgic person. I think, I don't know if I'm not nostalgic because I have bad memory or I have a bad memory because I'm not nostalgic. Like, my mind doesn't put any energy into remembering things. I keep moving forward. I don't look back really. Yeah. How are you? I feel like if you're into music, if you're DJs, you're quite nostalgic by nature.
Yeah, I think I am.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Mm. Yeah.
The good old days.
What period of music are you most nostalgic for, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I have a particular... I don't I mean, don't they say that there's a particular part of your brain that forms when you're the music you listen to when you're a teenager?
Yeah, right.
Will always be special to you, even if it's trash. And so I kind of sometimes I think, oh, I wish someone had not let me listen to so much Avril Lavigne.
Oh man, what an age, what an era!
But, you know, when you're 14,
that was classic. Yeah, I was a weird teenager. My music was like I was obsessed with the crooners and like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and all that kind of jazz and blues and the Great American Songbook. Yeah,
wow.
As a teenager, I was a little freak.
Did you want to be a crooner?
Yeah, that's the first thing I wanted to be. Before really? I found stand-up, I was like, I'm going to be a singer. Because I just like,
can
I was obsessed with it. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I was really
maybe
into
with
it.
The mustache now.
Oh, yeah.
You could do crooner. I think I could see it.
Ooh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Put on a nice suit.
Yeah, that was the thing. I also loved like wearing a suit as a teenager. I was such a weird little boy. But I remember. I know all the lyrics of like the Great American Songbook. Like, if something starts, I know, you know, hear a little bit of an intro to a Nat King Cole song. I know straight away what song it is. I was just obsessed with it. I was a real freak. I'm actually singing on Saturday. There's Michelle Brazier does.
Comedians audition for musicals.
Auditioning for musicals. Yeah.
Right, and you're going to be part of it?
Yeah.
What's your song?
I want to sing a song from.
Is it a secret?
I don't think so. Okay. I'm going to sing Something's Coming from West Side Story. I love West Side Story.
So do I, but I can't think of what Something's Coming is.
Could be. Who knows?
Oh my God.
It's the one that is when he's like stacking boxes outside just before it all kicks off.
Okay.
It's the foreshadowing of him meeting Maria.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah. The many sides to Phil Wang. Who you can catch in and that's on at Max Watts during the Comedy Festival at 9:10 p.m. How's
it's late. It's a bit late. This is like how old I am now. When I first started, the first time I was at this festival was 2015, and I was just partying every night.
Mm.
I think this is a generational thing as well. People don't seem to be hanging out this festival, or they're not telling me about it. But like when I was here, when I started, it was just like at the Hi-Fi Club every night.
Mm.
And now not so much.
Mm. Oh, there's been a COVID hangover as well.
Yeah. Also, Gen Z don't really drink.
Mm.
There's
some good things about them, though.
I think they're a good bunch.
Yeah.
But yeah, 9:10 is late, man. Also means I can't have a big dinner. I love, you know, I eat so much that I've ruined shows in Melbourne before because I just had too many noodles before.
Oh, and then you bloated.
Oh, terrible.
That's why you wear tracksuits.
It's worse than being drunk, I think, being full. For
on stage.
Yeah.
Really?
Because at least if you're drunk, you're still a little limber. If you're really full, you're just way down. I cannot think.
I had a curry before a show once, and I've never bombed harder.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're also like parched all the time. If it's salty, you're parched. You've
got reflux.
You're going
to get the microphone.
Honestly. And yes, ruins your timing because you've got to go whoops like that.
Well, your show is aptly titled I've Had Too Many Noodles. Phil Wang is on at the Comedy Festival. Head to comedyfestival.com.au and you'll be playing West Side Story at Michelle Brazier's show.
Oh, yeah, on Saturday.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I'll be doing it completely earnestly. I've got no jokes. I'm treating it like a real audition.
I bet. Beautiful. Well, thanks very much, Phil, for coming in.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Triple R.
I talk weird science with the reliably light touch of Dr. Jen. Morning, Dr. Jen.
Good morning. I have a bone to pick with all of you. I've been listening this morning. What's this about me tickling you guys? That sounds like it would be very non-okay, non-PC.
And that's what we've been telling people.
Well, I must admit, I did have to give Mon a very big cuddle this morning when I saw you. I've
much
missed you, Mon. It's lovely to have you back. But I didn't tickle you.
No, you didn't, and I appreciate
the
that
The intimacy
as well.
Coordinator is off sick today. So
it does beg the question, are you all terribly ticklish? Is that why the idea of me coming in and tickling you is so terrible?
I'm really ticklish.
Yeah,
I have to resist the urge to tickle you.
Yeah, I think I'm okay. You know, some people can't get a massage.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not one of them.
Okay, that's
but
good.
But I have some.
I can get a massage.
Yeah, some people.
What kind of massages do people get?
Do you go to the tickle parlor? Yeah. No. Anyway, but I feel like some people just.
I'm 100%. Some people will absolutely not. You know, cannot be touched by a stranger because it's so Yeah, ticklish. Mm. Daniel, you're staying very quiet.
No,
should I come and tickle you?
I haven't been touched physically since 2008, so I don't have any intel on it.
So I thought we'd talk about tickling because I found this article and it made me reflect on the fact that, like, I've been coming in and talking about science on Triple R for 20 years now and I've never talked about tickling, and it's such a weird phenomenon, right? Because, like, why on earth do we laugh when someone tickles us? Because tickling is actually quite unpleasant. It's this weird mix of sort of pleasure but also annoyance, and I think it can verge on distress. Tickling can be really horrible, and yet our brains respond with laughter. What is that? And we can't tickle ourselves, which is very weird. Like, if you try, even if you are ultra ticklish, it doesn't work. So, like, what is going on? And as I discovered when I came across this paper that I was reading, that it turns out scientists have been trying to figure out this for a really long time, the deal with tickling, and I've just never read about it before. So that's why I thought we needed to talk about it. But the first thing that I learned is there's actually two different types of tickling. The first one is called nismesis, note the silent K, so it's actually K-N-I-S-M-E-S-I-S. And you know when someone brushes against you lightly, or like maybe, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a ladybird kind of walking on you, you know, that sort of really light, sort of feathery touch, maybe you get goosebumps. That is considered a type of tickling, but it doesn't make you laugh. The one that we all think of as the ha-ha, you know, making me laugh kind of tickling, that is called gargalesis. So next time someone tickles you and you don't like it, say, I'm not a fan of gargalesis. And they'll think that you're really weird. Anyway, but that's that kind of full-on uncontrollable, you know, I'm laughing kind of tickling. And it happens in very specific parts of your body. So, Mon, where are you ticklish? Bron, like you said, you're very ticklish. What are the parts of the body that are ticklish?
I say rib, like down the side.
Oh, the classic.
The classic rib cage.
Under the arms. Under the arms.
Armpits, yeah.
Feet. Ribs.
On the top of my, like, thighs.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Oh. That's a less common one.
Armpits. I'm like getting touched with
Armpits, ribs and feet are the most common ones. And those spots aren't random. So the thing we know about tickling is that the places that you tend to be most ticklish are the places that you're most vulnerable. And so that's our first clue that maybe tickling might be not about fun and play. It might also actually be about survival. So one of the theories is that tickling evolved as a kind of training system for our defences. So, you know, if I come over and tickle you under the ribs, what do? You twist, you try and get away, you try and escape, you try and get away from me because you don't like it. And the idea is that these sensitive exposed areas being really ticklish means that you are, you know, rehearsing your response to being captured in a really low stakes kind of safe way, so that if somebody does grab you in that place, you've already been through the motions of trying to escape them. And so your body's kind of saying, you know, yes, this is play, but actually I'm practicing something really important here, which kind of raises the stakes on tickling, right? Like, if you're tickling your kids, are you training them how to get away from being attacked?
It's an enhanced interrogation technique.
It's kind of a bit stressful, but I think that explains why we can't tickle ourselves, because the whole idea is that we've evolved to have this tickle response when somebody, you know, attacks us or touches us in an unpredictable way, exactly when you've been caught off guard. But if you're doing it yourself, your brain already knows that it's coming, and so therefore you're not ticklish, which is really quite interesting. And in fact, there's been some really clever research done on this. Scientists, because scientists are so cool, made a tickle monster, like basically a robot that tickles people in very controlled, you know, predictable ways.
Like Elmo?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it looks like Elmo, but the point being, they kind of tested, the idea was to control exactly how predictable the tickling touch was, and if they got the robot to mimic your own hand movements, the people didn't find it at all ticklish because the brain was expecting to feel that. But as soon as they made it asynchronous, as in what the robot was doing and what your brain was expecting to happen, as soon as they were out of sync by a couple of seconds, all of a sudden you respond to it as a tickle again, which is really, really interesting. So basically, if you know somebody is going to tickle you, it won't be ticklish.
I was going to ask that if they say, okay, I'm going to do this now.
Yeah, and if you're watching their hands and they're saying, I'm going to tickle you now, if according to the science, you should be less ticklish in response to that than if you don't know it's coming.
They go, do not touch me.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
I don't want to test this now, but I won't. That would be very not okay. But one of the really interesting things, like, tell me, why do you think we laugh?
Is it just your nervous system not knowing what to do? What to do? And that's response?
I mean, kind of, because that's the weird thing. Why would we laugh when actually we find it uncomfortable?
Well, it's very strange. Is that like how you break tension? Like that's you...
Yeah, maybe. The thing to know is that the sort of laughter you do in response to tickling is actually quite different to normal laughter. So you know how generally you kind of get a choice whether you laugh or not. You know, if someone tells you something funny, you know, you're deciding whether you want to respond with laughter or not. And if someone told you don't laugh, no matter what I say don't laugh, generally you can stop yourself. The tickle
oh, usually that's the opposite effect. Like going to church.
Right? Yeah. But it is under your control, whereas the laughter that you have in response to tickling is actually not under your control.
It's like involuntary.
Yeah, it's completely involuntary. You can't help yourself. And that's the weird thing because you can talk to someone who's being tickled and say, are you having fun right now? And they can say, no, this is horrible. I really want you to stop.
But they keep laughing.
But they keep laughing.
It's the most maddening part.
it's very, very odd. So one of the ideas is that... that laughter during tickling evolved as a kind of signal to say to both you and the person tickling you, you're safe, I'm safe, this is just play, this is okay. But we've ended up with this quite kind of imperfect signal because actually sometimes when you're being tickled, you really want the other person to stop and it's actually really uncomfortable and you really don't want it to continue. But your body is laughing in an involuntary way, which is quite weird, I think.
Yeah. I get enlisted to play tickle tag where I have to chase...
Right.
A six-year-old, and then tickle them, and then they tell me to stop. And it seems like very counterintuitive.
Yeah, it is really counterintuitive. And I guess, you know, to me it sort of raises this quite important philosophical question. And I think for every parent listening, like, is tickling actually fun? Or is it something that we have come to interpret as fun in the right context? So we know that tickling is more likely to be considered enjoyable if it comes from someone you trust. So, you know, a parent, a partner, a child, a sibling, whatever it is. And in those situations, it's sort of part of social bonding. You know, it's playful, it's safe, it's kind of this shared experience. Exactly the same physical sensation from someone you don't know. That is then not safe and can be quite invasive.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah,
if you're in the bus stop and someone just came.
Hi, I'm a tickle monster. And so I think, you know, there's this strong sort of social component with kids and tickling and play. And so one of the arguments is that, you know, kids tickle each other a lot. They ask their parents to tickle them. It's this well-rehearsed kind of safe game. And it's this very common form of play that maybe we evolved to tickle as a way of learning about boundaries and as a way of learning about consent and as a way of learning when to stop and, you know, when to listen to each other. And it's not just humans who tickle. There's been lots of research.
Really?
Rats really like tickling. There's been lots of research. So we know the sounds that rats make when they're experiencing positive emotions. Mm-hmm. And if you tickle a rat, they make that sound. They seem to really like tickling.
So they don't just like it from each other. No,
humans can tickle rats.
No, that's too predictable.
Humans can tickle rats.
Same
rats
spots,
will make a sound. Yeah, same spots. Rats will make a sound that to our best understanding of another species, which is obviously always going to be impaired, but to our best understanding indicates that they really like it. And primates also, particularly young primates playing, so, you know, think apes, think chimpanzees, think orangutans, they have a lot of play that involves tickling. So I don't know, tickling is just really weird. And I guess, you know, it's one of those things that I really love that we come in here and chat about, that as much as it seems this pretty basic, straightforward part of life, there's all this stuff we don't really understand about it yet. Why did it evolve? Why have we ended up with this imperfect signal that you're tickling me, I'm laughing, but actually the last thing I want to do is laugh and I really want you to stop, but I'm laughing too hard to tell you to stop.
Next time I'm in an alleyway and I find a rat, I'm going to pick that up. Tickle his little ribs.
So you're listening for these kind of high-pitched little chirping sounds, which is
the
rat's
way. Straight to hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. The scientist putting a feather on the rat's foot.
Okay, we need some rats now. We're going to have to test this. Any locals who've got a pet rat, can you do some experiments for us?
It'll be our secret sound. Dr. Jen, fascinating as always. And, well, we'll see you next week.
And I promise I won't tickle you any time. I really promise.
Feeling a little stiff this morning. Went for a run yesterday.
Wow.
First time in a long time. Thank you. Didn't get, I mean, just a lap of Princess Park.
That's okay. What's that, three?
Three?
Point. I'm not, three. I know that Jace is an avid runner. You got nothing to fear with me.
Yeah, right.
Never been for a run, so that's fine.
I think it's about three. And I'll put it on the record, my favourite park. In
yeah,
Melbourne.
When you're running around graffitiing anything with an icon park about sacking Fossey.
Loved it. But I went with former breakfaster, Geraldine Hickey.
Mm.
Oh, is this the funny runners?
That was the funny runners, yeah. Not all the funny runners. It was just Geraldine, Lizzie Who, and myself went for a nice little trot, run walk.
Call it a run. It's a run.
It was mostly a run. But after we went and got a coffee and we're standing there, just a hole in the wall coffee thing near the park, and this woman comes up to order a coffee and she spots Jez. She goes, I recognise you. You look so familiar. She's like, yeah, I'm a comedian, da-da-da. She's like, oh, of course, Geraldine, you've been in the jungle, blah, blah.
Mm.
She looks over to Lizzie. Actually, you too. You look pretty familiar. What do you? Are you also a comedian? Lizzie says, yes, I'm a comedian as well. She goes, yes, I did. I have seen your face. She turns to me and she says, what do you do? And I said, sadly, I'm also a comedian. And she went, yes, I was going to say I did.
That you do look kind of funny.
I was like, don't do it, don't do it. But she was like, yes, I know your face. I'm like, no, you don't.
Oh, I feel bad for this woman.
I feel bad for me.
I do as well, yeah.
And also, shut your mouth. I've got betting ads to film.
Yeah, yeah, I don't want you to recognize me. I can't be a celebrity. Yeah.
Yeah, this is, it's not good for me financially. But God, it's brutal.
Mm.
I think if you just... Don't do it.
If you what?
Don't, if you don't recognise someone.
Don't say you don't recognise them.
You know, you should be like, well, good for
she
you.
She was being
you
inclusive.
Yeah, she was trying. I mean, yeah. It made it worse. Because,
oh.
Of course, she leaves and I get roasted.
Yeah. I'm sure Geraldine would have loved that.
Yeah, she loved the whole exchange. She was absolutely top dog, got recognised first, and then just watched it trickle down.
Doesn't seem fair that there's like so many opportunities for humiliation.
Oh, just constant.
Like, even just outside of being on stage, you can be humiliated having a coffee with friends.
Just having a nice coffee with friends.
Oh, God.
I've already humiliated myself. I'm out in public running.
I said, I saw you running.
Shocking
and I thought she must be a comedian.
I thought she's no athlete.
There's got to be another reason she's doing this.
Is their trainer?
Oh, brutal.
That's rough.
And then how, when they, what do you think? So you cut her off at the pass and allowed her to not proceed when
no,
she was reaching.
No, she did it.
Yeah.
I didn't. I should have. And I just I let it happen and I stood there and took it. And I thought, I hate this. Mm. And I had to be like, yeah, maybe you've seen me on the Know Where I've Been.
Yeah. Gala,
the guy did. Oh, yeah, all right. I was on TV for 4 minutes.
Yeah, it's a good 4 minutes. She must have remembered it.
She might. Yeah, it's pretty. Good
it's
4 minutes.
It's hard
four.
If someone says, "Oh, where do I?" I think I every not often, but sometimes people say, "Where do I know you from?" And I would get that. And I think I have. I've said this before. I did a lot, for many years. I was an extra, and I got told once from my extras agent, "You'll get lots of work because you have a very plain face." And at the time, I was like, excellent, all I hear is lots of work.
Yeah.
And then I would tell people, they go, that's a horrible thing to say. And I was like, well, prove me wrong. Because I think people sometimes go, you look familiar. I'm like, no, I just look like everybody else.
Yeah. What was your peak extras work?
Well, I had an ongoing role on Neighbours. I've talked about this before. I was like the waitress in the cafe on Neighbours for like a couple of years.
Wow.
No lines because they'd have to pay me more than $25 an hour or whatever it was I was giving. And I was a nurse in Offspring.
But they had to get you back.
They had to get me back. I had a name, Margie. One time I got talked to and I was allowed to nod. Margie, can you cover me for a second? And I had to
And you just
nodded. And I was like, oh my
and they,
God,
and they
it's
said,
my big break.
Do not say a word.
Shut up.
What era are we to, who was the most, who's kicked on the most? Like it was Guy Pearce and that Margot Robbie was in the cafe.
My colleague, I like to call her.
Yeah. Your acting partner.
Margs. Yeah, did meet her on set. And she would remember me.
Yeah, of course. I'm waiting for that.
Her and
thank
Harold.
Thank you. Yeah. In the acceptance speech.
Oh, Barbie. Barbie needed an extra. I think there are some plain
Didn't
Barbies.
Get a call up. Yeah.
Why not me?
Imagine plain Barbie. She's not allowed to talk.
She's got middle brown hair, average height.
Was there anything Pavlovian about the cafe itself? Like, did it fit? Did people want coffee? Did people bring in coffee? Like, because it feels as though there should be, or is it purely make believe and there was nothing?
No, because it's just a set. Like, it didn't feel like a real cafe.
What about the cups? Like the weight of the cups? Like, did you know, or did people pretend that they were full? Because sometimes you need assistance.
And that's right. And you'd need to pour it. We used cola for black coffee. A little inside tip there.
Was it flat?
Yeah, sometimes.
Flat cola?
Yeah.
Far out.
For espresso, because I don't think the neighbour's budget back in 2010 stretched to having an actual
that's
coffee.
That's a bit urban, isn't it?
I'd have to make, like, you know, do all the make all, but there was the
sound effects afterwards.
You were doing the sound effects.
I was good boxing.
Yeah. That's why I never got any lines.
Get too busy making the sound. Doing Foley in the background.
Yeah, I know. You say that like a grandma in Erinsborough is like getting a long black.
Yeah, but
and not a cappuccino.
Well, so no, they would do milk. Sometimes it would be like mainly milk, or they'd have froth. I can't even remember.
Oh, milk in the flat cola, or
no, that'd be different.
Oh, okay,
or you'd always be half full, so they wouldn't have to see the foam on top.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think that you're recognised from that, or from?
No, I don't think No. I think it's, but that's where I was heading with that. Mm-hmm. But if you want to talk about my extras career, please, we can do that. I'm back now. We've got many days, but if someone says, "Where do I know you from?" I think it's always better to just go, I don't know, because if you say probably this and they go no. Then it's like you got tickets on yourself.
Did Geraldine go into bat for you? Say she's a breakfaster.
She did say that, and she said, "You know, triple R," and the woman said no, and she went, "Oh, well, that's what she does."
I mean, if she recognised Geraldine from Mama Celebrity, then maybe because I remember going to a family Christmas once, and an extended family member brought a new boyfriend, and Mum said to him, have I met you before? You look familiar. And his response straight away, again, knew no one, said, "Oh, you probably know me because I got a really good TER.
No.
I got a really good ATAR." But this is when Mum was like, "No, not that."
Just
finished year 12.
Do they get published?
Maybe, but like,
as in you heard of me around the traps, or I was in the newspaper?
No, I wasn't in the newspaper. Just like, is that how you know me?
People are talking about me.
Yeah, because I got a good entry score. She's like, no. I don't know you.
Is he still hanging around the family?
No.
Yeah.
No, but I think it lasted. But like I said, he was a second cousin's partner. But that story has always stuck in my head. But I thought it's always better to go, "Oh, I don't know, little old me, maybe I just for plain."
Well, what happens whenever the ATAR scores come out? What I do is I research the top 100.
Yeah, and then look up all their socials. Yeah. So you can get
I like to study the faces of children I don't know.
That's right.
I don't know.
That's right.
And what kind of marketing?
It's a victimless crime, apart from the victims.
Just in case they arrive and
you don't know.
Triple R on FM, digital, online, and via the app.
Oh my God, it's our Friday Funny by Geraldine Hickey.
Ta-da! Here I am. Welcome back. It's April Amnesty. Let's get. I've just put on these headphones, and it's if you need to, this is my pitch to subscribe, so Triple R can get some new headphones, because I reckon these headphones have been here for the 50 years that Triple R has been around. It's good to be back. But I'm looking around, you've got nice, everyone else has got nice. Oh, we'll give the guests the old.
I get red ones.
Crappy headphones. Mm. But my chair just drops on me. It's good to be back. Oh, yeah, that does. I've seen you do that.
This party slowly sinks over the episode.
And then and your arms fly up, and a pile of newspapers goes flying everywhere.
Oh, me back! Compo!
Yeah. Anyway, it's good to be back.
Yeah,
thanks
it's great
for having
to see
me.
You. What's the goss, goodness sake?
Mate, there's a festival on. It's the Comedy Festival. It's the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Talk about celebrating happy birthdays, 50 years of Triple R, and 40 years for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I did my first show 20 years ago. My first solo show 20 years ago, which means the first time I came on Breakfasters was 19 years ago. And it was the day that I got up early, to come in, and then I was running late, and then I was calling. I thought I was calling producer, but they weren't even. Would have been Michelle Bennett. Wasn't even in the room. Mm. And then she's calling the station, and Fee's like, "Just come in anyway. We'll get you on." Mm. And because I was late, because someone had tried to steal my motorbike, and so I couldn't get. And then I was just desperately trying to get in, and I got in at like 8:45, and they got me straight on. And then I told them, I said, "Oh, yeah, someone tried to steal my bike." And then so Fee just went, "If anyone can help her out." And then by the end, before I left the building, a woman had come in with a bicycle to loan to me to ride around on. And I was like, it was actually a motorcycle. But, thank you. But also a motorbike mechanic called up, and he came around and fixed my bike.
Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, my God, amazing.
That's why you're
strong. Oh, you've come a long way, baby. I remember seeing you do a show at Wesleyan, and I think after the show you were wandering around tables seeing if there were any leftover drinks.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah. But it just shows you that life can spin on a dime, can't it?
Oh, totally, yeah. Mm. You just keep plugging away and you save money by just taking other people's drinks. And
you don't show every year?
Still do that one. What's that?
If you don't show every year?
Every year for the last 20 years, yeah. Okay. I mean, some of them were, like, I might have been in... I once did like a best of show, which is I was 5 years in, and it's like, oh yeah, it's time I did a best of.
My fifth, then I'm like, I've run out.
Yeah, because it's best of was just code for I can't think of anything else. So, and it's like, oh, the 200 people that have seen me, maybe I'll try and grow from that. Mm. So, but yeah, I'm having a wonderful time. I'm seeing some great stuff. There's so many great shows. I saw Kate Dennett last night.
Great show.
Oh,
big recommend to go see
Cathartic.
Echo.
Yeah. What's that what it's called?
It's called Echo, yeah.
It's on at like 9:30.
Too late.
Just do you know what, Paul and all, do it on the weekend. Get tickets for that because that's selling out. But it's so cathartic. Oh, my God.
Let's talk about you. I mean, the gala, you were talking about surgery.
Oh, yeah. So my show this year is called A Weight Off My Chest, and it's a really hard-hitting show about – no, it's I had breast reduction surgery, but they took them all because I had shit boobs.
Was that their
diagnosis?
Yeah. No, that was mine. Right. I went to my doctor and went, "Oh, no, I like my boobs. What can we do about it? Oh, can I have a breast reduction? But how about we just take all of them? How about that? Then I don't have to decide like how much do you want to go down? Mm. So that what about just all of them?
Wow.
Yeah. Don't need them. Don't want them.
Does it make you a much faster runner?
Do you know what, mate? Like, I was so excited about going for a run post-surgery. And this is, like, the surgeon and I were talking about it. She goes, it'll be pretty quick. It won't take too long. Like, I saw her a few days, like a week after the surgery. She goes, "You could probably start, just having a little jog now." This is, like, a week after. And I'm like, I might wait a little bit longer than that. So I waited, like, a little bit longer, and then... I just, every time I went for a run, like I was just like, okay, do you know what? Maybe I've come back too quick. I just couldn't breathe as well. I was just like, oh, this is taking a while to get back on it. And then a few months later, I found out that I had an overactive thyroid. Oh. And so my resting heart rate was at like, 80, but, and like it was so much higher than what it used to be. And then my, so when I go for a run, my heart rate would get to like over 200 beats per minute. Whoa. So the doctor was like, no running. But anyway, that's all under control now. And I'm back at it, but just still the same pace. But getting out to do the run, heaps quicker.
No bra.
Yeah, no bra. Just put undies, shorts, T-shirt, go. Amazing. Bang out the door.
The
I'm saving so much time.
I never realised how much time it was taking to get a bra on.
Oh, yeah. No, we just type the bras Jez wore.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd put two on for a run. Yeah, double bra it.
Yeah. You went for a run with Bron the other day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you talk about it?
I did, about you and Lizzie getting recognised and then that woman going, what do you do? I know you. No, you don't.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
But you went into bat for Bron.
Oh, yeah, I was very inclusive. Mm. That's what I like to do.
Yeah, just little guy.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever heard of Triple R?
She went, nah, you should subscribe.
Yeah, I'm sure she did.
Yeah.
How's the diesel plant was in the news. That's not a million miles from you. Have you ever visited it?
What?
In Wonthaggi.
Oh, why is it in the news?
Oh, just because they're cranking it up.
Great.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, because whenever I think of that area, I think of you.
Yeah, thank you. Mm. And that's
the ambassador.
That's the aim. That's the aim. Like, I'm trying to shift focus on other things that happened in the 90s in the town of Maui. And so when people think of Maui now, they think Geraldine Hickey.
Yeah, needs a new PR spin.
Yeah.
And Daniel's going to do it.
Yeah. And the Comedy Theatre is just it's such a gorgeous venue.
Oh, my God. It's wild. It's so big and beautiful. And, like, the first night, because I opened on Tuesday, and I was so overwhelmed by, you know, just the fact that I was there that I managed to get a show together and was like, so I just was like really happy and excited. But also when I get excited and I cry. Mm. And so, and it's just like that when that music goes and you can hear people clapping and the lights are going and I'm on the side of the stage going, hello, Melbourne, welcome to stage, mate. And then it's just like this wave of emotion. Mm. So I walk out crying. But I'm like playing it cool. I'm like, oh, yeah, nobody's going to see. And just, you know, just a casual wave and a wiping of the, oh, hello. Just wait. And then, I swear I'd spent, so I was so out of my head in the first part of the show because I was absolutely convinced my nose had snot running out of it. And I was like, how do I, like, subtly do this, but in a theatre of just without going. You know, I was going to,
You should closing one nostril.
Yeah. Doing the bush hanky. I can't. I would never do that.
She's been in the jungle.
Yeah. Tricky way to start your show.
Oh, yeah.
Did people care in the end? Did people notice?
Oh, I don't know. I think people noticed that, everyone just had a really great time.
Yeah, but they love you because you're real.
Yeah. Mm. Well,
the real tears.
Yeah. Mm. I think, you know, people, oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what people think. Well, give us a call.
Text him.
It's not haunted or anything. There's no idea. No one says anything about the comedy. I've never heard a haunted story.
No.
Unlike Her Majesty's.
But it's got the... it's old enough and it's like you go exploring backstage and stuff. Like, it's like, oh, this is obviously had history, but you don't get the vibe that you do in other, like, where you feel like, oh, there's a vibe
Yeah,
here.
Right.
Is this your third year at the Comedy Theatre?
This is the second time at the Comedy Theatre. I was there a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
But yeah, it's not nice to be back.
Mm. Yeah, what was your first room?
The backstage room.
Oh.
I sat in the backstage room. It was a 50-seater. And then because they were like, oh, so I sold maybe an average of like 20 or 30 tickets. Like on a good night, I get, you know, 30 tickets. And so they went, well, if you're selling, like, that's your average. So we'll put you in a 30-seater. Then you'll sell out every night.
Mm.
But they didn't realise that the nights that I'd sell more, they were the nights that boosted me up to 30. So when I went to, I did other rooms that were like 30 seaters, then my average dropped down to, you know, 15 people a night. And then so they were like, and you can't go any lower than 30 at the time. So, but yeah, I was in like 30 seaters for the next few years. And it was a real hard slog. It's just like being in this tiny, like there was one room where there wasn't enough room for the tech. So the tech sat just outside the door while I did the show. And there was other rooms where there was no backstage. It was just either, like I just would sit on the stage while everyone came in. Mm. But
no curtain? Because sometimes I've been to shows, you know, and they're just sitting, like you can kind of almost see their feet.
Yeah, you've done that.
Yeah, I've done that heaps and listened to everything everyone says.
Yeah, you can hear
Yeah. I remember hearing a woman walk in and go, oh, more people in here than I thought. Why are you here? You clearly hate me.
Because it's in those tiny rooms and it's the ones where it's people, they probably don't know you and they've taken a chance to come and see you. And so they are like a bit, you know, going, I hope this is good. What do you know about this? And so, and yeah, when you do hear it all, it's, yeah, it's great times.
So now you're on... You're just doing the rest of the run. There's shows every single night.
Every night except except for Monday, where I'm hosting the 40th, the Big 4-0.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Big 4-0, the 40th anniversary gala, which is very exciting.
It's going to be as big as your 40th?
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Big 4-0, and which I'm very stressed about. I'm having dreams about my teeth falling out. I'm having a really great time. Wow.
More tears. How exciting.
Yeah.
More tears, how exciting.
And what about the wardrobe?
What I'm wearing on
stage.
Yeah,
I want to know about that.
Yeah.
Do you wear the same thing?
Yeah, every night.
Yeah.
And I was, I hadn't made a final decision on which outfit I was going to wear, but like I love a one piece, like a boiler suit.
Mm.
And I, the first night I wore, I've got a, like a, you know, a jumpsuit. Thing that I that I'm wearing in the poster, and so I thought I don't know if you had I know you had some posters because I saw one in a pile of newspapers over there. So
there's a good one in the bin. Actually,
Go see Geraldine Hickey at the Comedy Theatre in A Weight Off My Chest, including a special 4 p.m. show one Sunday. That's your final show.
And this Sunday,
at 4 p.m.
Like 6 o'clock during the week, 6:30 on a Saturday, 4 o'clock on a Sunday. Something for everybody.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
Head to comedyfestival.com today to find out more. Geraldine Hickey next week.
Melbourne's own Triple R.
Thanks for listening to the best bits of Breakfasters. Catch us live on Triple R every weekday morning from 6 till 9 a.m. or listen on demand at rrr.org.au or on the Triple R app. You can get in touch with us via Instagram, Facebook, or the Triple R website.